The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Mexico! All day! Puro pinche Mexico! Trump, his wife, everybody! Mexico and Native Americans and blacks, we belong here!
My fellow Minnesotans, what's happening in Minnesota right now defies belief. News reports simply don't do justice to the level of chaos and disruption and trauma the federal government is raining down upon our communities. But as bad as it's been, Donald Trump intends for it to get worse. All across Minnesota, people are stepping up to help their neighbors who are being unjustly and unlawfully targeted. Folks, I know it's scary, and I know it's absurd that we all have to be defending law and order, justice, and humanity, while also caring for our families and trying to do our jobs. So tonight, let me say once again to Donald Trump and Kristi Noem, end this occupation. You've done enough.
Almost there.
Oh, wow. Oh, my God.
Oh my God.
They got a hold of ICE's entire game plan for Minneapolis, they said in a packet. That's what Status Quo is reading.
Let me say four critical things to the people of Minnesota. Four things I want you to hear as you watch the news and look out for your neighbors. First, Donald Trump wants this chaos. He wants confusion. And yes, he wants more violence on our streets.
Oh, I got hit in the head really bad.
Oh. Second, you are not powerless. You are not helpless, and you are certainly not alone.
I am disabled. I have a brain injury.
Stay back.
I am disabled. I have a brain injury. Put me down.
The third thing I want to say to you tonight is we will not have to live like this forever. Accountability is coming at the voting booth and in court. We will reclaim our communities from Donald Trump.
Total anarchy out here. Cops are leaving. They're leaving. They're out of here. They are totally retreating.
Our streets! Our streets!
Sorry.
And that brings me to the fourth thing I want to say tonight, Minnesota. How incredibly proud I am of the way that you've risen to meet this unbearable moment. But I'm not at all surprised, because this is who we are. Minnesotans believe in the rule of law, and Minnesotans believe in the dignity of all people. We're a place where there's room for everybody.
Murderers! You're the murderers! You have blood on your hands! Nazi pieces of Nazi!
Nazis that stand there like a idiot with a riot stick just begging to hit all of us for standing here. You!
We're an island of decency in a country being driven towards cruelty. We will remain an island of decency, of justice, of community, of peace. And tonight I come before you simply to ask, don't let anyone take that away from us.
Iran's clerical rulers face their toughest challenge in decades. But despite nationwide protests and mounting foreign pressure, analysts say the Islamic Republic security elite shows no sign of cracking. Iran's 86-year-old supreme leader Ayatollah Ali Khamenei has weathered five major uprisings since 2009. But experts warn survival does not equal stability. Sanctions have crippled the economy, and Iran's regional alliances are weakening. Trump has hinted at measures ranging from cyber strikes to restoring internet access for protesters. But U.S. military assets are stretched, and any action carries serious risks. For now, Washington's strategy remains unclear.
To Iran this morning that help is on the way for protesters. What did you mean by that? What kind of help?
You're going to have to figure that one out. I'm sorry.
We were told that the killing in Iran is stopping, and it's stopped, and it's stopping. And there's no plan for executions or executions. So I've been told that a good authority will find out about it. I'm sure if it happens, we'll all be very upset.
Diplomacy appears to be breaking down very quickly with Washington's next move and Iran's leadership hanging in the balance. The U.S. is now pulling some personnel from its largest military base in Qatar, which is home to about 10,000 troops. It's understood hundreds of staff have been advised to leave Al Udeid Air Base in a coordinated move after it was again identified as a potential target. And in the last few minutes, the U.K. has actually followed suit, also withdrawing about 1,000 staff from that same site as a precautionary act.
Five major Iranian banks are on the verge of total collapse, including Bank Shbar, which is associated with the Revolutionary Guards. This raises the question, is the Iranian regime under pressure? Do they feel they are on the brink of collapse? And the answer, according to what we're reporting tonight, is likely yes. It turns out Iran's real concern isn't security or ideology, but what matters most to them? Money.
China, meanwhile, is threatening to retaliate against President Trump after he announced a 25% tariff on any country doing business with Iran. China, of course, has been in business with Iran for years. They've been the top buyer of Iranian oil for years, buying at least 90% of Iran's oil exports. That's worth roughly $2 billion a month.
The crisis in Iran is beginning to spill beyond its borders. Tehran is warning neighboring countries that host U.S. forces that American bases could be targeted if Washington intervenes in Iran's ongoing protests. A senior Iranian official told Reuters that the message has been conveyed to several U.S. allies in the region, including Saudi Arabia, the United Arab Emirates, and Turkey.
Americans woke up this morning and they saw that you said help is on the way.
Yeah.
What do you mean by that?
Well, there's a lot of help on the way and in different forms, including economic help from our standpoint, and not going to help Iran very much. And, you know, we put Iran out of business with their nuclear capacity. And now, depending on what's actually happening, nobody's been able to give us accurate numbers about how many people they've killed.
Well, on that
point, it looks like it could be a pretty substantial number, and that's going to be a lot of problems for them.
And this strong action you're talking about, what's the end game?
The end game is to win.
Seemed like a good time for a mega montage. The world's on fire. I mean, this is not exactly a world filled with peace and tranquility. Not when you just look at what's happening on the ground or in Iran or in Minneapolis. It's a world in turmoil. We keep coming back to 2 Timothy 3, the last days and the perilous and dangerous times that would lead into the return of Jesus Christ to this earth. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is The Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining us on today's show. You can get to the live video stream of this program at our website, thetrumpet.com, or just go to the Rumble channel, rumble.com/Trumpet Daily. We're coming up to the January 16 anniversary. That's tomorrow. 40 years since an end-time Elijah, a servant of God, came in the spirit and power of Elijah. And he was God's instrument for well over 50 years. And, you know, he writes in Mystery of the Ages. He wrote about it a lot, in fact, what he had lived through. I mean, he was born at a time when it was the horse and buggy age. And he lived long enough to see the space age back in the 1960s and 70s and 80s. And then he dies in 1986. And it's interesting. I mean, just even getting some perspective, Mr. Armstrong, he lived to 93 years of age, and he talked about how much the world had changed in that nearly a century of time. and how much progress on the one hand. It was a great paradox, he said, because evils were multiplying just as fast as the technology. And now you fast forward and you look at, well, look at the way the world was in 1986. Just look back 40 years. Look at how different our world is today. I mean, you can't say it was a world without trouble back then. In fact, that's the year he released Mystery of the Ages, 1985. And Mr. Armstrong in Mystery of the Ages talked about the troubles in this world. But what would he say today? Just like, I mean, even the evil and the struggle and the division and the wars before January 16, 1986, a lot of the wars were brought on by two power blocks. And it was this fight, you know, democracy against communism that went on for decades. I mean, the Soviet Union was still a beast in 1985, 1986. I mean, it soon collapsed following the death of Mr. Armstrong. It had to for a lot of other power blocks to emerge so that Bible prophecy could be fulfilled. This is from our little booklet, January 16, God's Miracle Day. And my father says here, on that date, 1986, Mr. Armstrong was taken out of the way. That's the language used in 2 Thessalonians 2. On that day, the great spiritual war of Daniel 8 began. It began in 1986. Look at the wave of destruction that we saw within spiritual Israel following Mr. Armstrong's death. He says, on that day, Satan began working mainly through one man, systematically dismantling and casting to the ground the truth that Mr. Armstrong had taught. I mean, we had never seen anything like this. Certainly not in America. I mean, the lawsuit over Mystery of the Ages, unprecedented. Since when has a church, of all things, since when has a church worked so hard to try to destroy the truth, to try to destroy books and booklets? That's what we went right up against in 1997, the moment that lawsuit began. An organization that said it had a Christian duty to keep Mystery of the Ages out of print. I mean, the Tkach people actually put the Christian label on their attempt to blot out the truth. Yeah, we've got a Christian duty to keep it out of print. That was the satanic spirit that we were going up against for 6 years. My father says that, you know, January 16 wasn't just when Mr. Armstrong died. It's also when Satan and his demon army were cast to this earth. And now they're confined to this earth. 40 years of the devil and his army being confined to this earth. And then you start looking at the world and all of these earth-shaking events these past 40 years. And it makes sense. It's obvious. Should be. This other booklet, I've got a quote from it. I'll give you in just a second. Overcoming Satan. This booklet has a fair bit to say about the significance of January 16, 1986. So does America Under Attack. So do so many of our articles. Who else gives you anything about that date and its significance and the significance of an end-time Elijah talked about in Matthew 17, talked about in Malachi 4? The Old Testament, the New Testament. Only God's church. Within a few short years of Mr. Armstrong's death, the Worldwide Church of God had renounced the very teachings that distinguished it as God's church. It took just a few years. We played some excerpts of Joe Tkach Sr.'s sermon in late 1994, where he basically renounced everything that they had believed and taught, all of Mr. Armstrong's teachings. Sabbath keeping out the window, tithe, anything that had to do with God's law. And here he explained it all away, just spiritualized it away by saying, you know, listen, if we remove all of these boundaries, well, we're going to be even better Christians because we're going to want to. We're going to want to obey God. We're going to want to be Sabbath keepers. No, they got rid of God's law, and what happened next? Well, the church, it was destroyed. Satan is destroyer. Everything Satan has touched turns to destruction. That's how you explain the montage that you just saw at the start of today's show. You have to see that there's a real spirit world. You have to see that Satan is enraged at the moment. He knows he has a short time left. Christ has already qualified to replace him as the king over all the earth. That's coming. I mean, I could go through 100 prophecies that revolve around that. But people don't want to hear the Bible. They don't want to hear about an end-time Elijah that came and witnessed to this earth. They don't want to hear about the Ten Commandments. They don't want to hear about God's law. They just want to spiritualize everything away. I mean, still say they're religious, of course. Yeah, we're still good Christians. Christians are followers of Christ. Christians follow in the steps of Christ. And this world isn't doing that at all. It's not God's world. This is Satan's world. Today, the Worldwide Church of God is utterly unrecognizable as the organization Mr. Armstrong founded. It's been renamed. It no longer keeps the Sabbath or the law of God. It retains none of the biblical truths he restored. Understand these scriptures and you begin to grasp why January 16 is such a pivotal date. It's so pivotal. I mean, if Satan's cast to this earth, well, look at what he's done these past 40 years. You've got, the Russian resurgence as Putin's gone to work, rebuilding the empire of old. But you don't have these two blocks, you know, because of communism. You don't have Europe just divided right down the middle. And that just paved the way for the new German war machine to be constructed. That paved the way for the Holy Roman Empire to be resurrected from the dead. It paved the way for so many prophecies to be fulfilled. Here again, we see just what a decisive pivot point in world history is January 16, 1986. The world entered a profoundly different time. And of course, we've been on it from the beginning. I mean, this show only goes back to 2015, but the trumpet.com, that goes back to the 90s. The Trumpet magazine goes back to 1990. This work started just 4 years after Herbert Armstrong died. God went to work raising the ruins. You had this Laodicean movement led by a man of sin that just utterly destroyed the church, the teachings. Everything about it that made it unique and wonderful. It impacted millions and millions of lives. Positively. Some of you are old enough to remember that history, that the Takach people went to work revising, lying about. Their goal was to just blot out the truth. Get rid of it. We must be aware of the scale of spiritual warfare that occurred on that date, January 16, 1986. And that has been taking place ever since. From that point, Satan and his evil minions were confined to earth. This has brought a whole new level of suffering to this world. Satan was already being worshipped on earth, but now it's even worse. Now he's cast down and he's full of wrath. He and his army are a spiritual force of tremendous evil and destructive power, we must be able to recognize their malevolent influence. Do you recognize it? There is a real spirit world. We do have to overcome our adversary, the devil. We have to be conquerors. Read the last few verses of Romans 8 sometime, where Paul said, look, I'm not going to let anything separate me from Jesus Christ. I'm not going to let any man or any Laodicean movement take me away from the truth. You've got to fight for it. I mean, Jude brings this out in his epistle. Read Jude 3 and verse 4 as well. You've got to contend. Churches in this world, they're not fighting and contending for anything. But in God's church, it's different because Satan is filled with rage and he wants to take the truth from you. You've got to prove all things and then hold fast. Here again, there's more military language. Read the armor of God chapter in Ephesians 6. It's a war. And we've got to put on armor or else Satan's going to take us out. Satan is our adversary. And when you see all the destruction that he's responsible for, I mean, it's sobering. It's sobering, and it's a good reminder that we better be builders for God. We better be doing God's work. Because that's what keeps us in a safe and blessed position. You see God's blessings in his work. You saw it with Mr. Armstrong. I mean, what an opportunity to just look back at that history and to see the fruits. I mean, what a stark contrast, too, to see the works of God on the one hand and then the works of the devil. It didn't take but a few years, and they came along, these Laodicean ministers, and just destroyed everything. And now we see a world, not just a church, a world in turmoil. Look at how much this world has changed for the worse these past four decades. I mean, really, it's stunning. When you just, as we've covered in recent months on this show, when you just hear what they're saying about, well, Germany's got to take the lead. Donald Trump is a perfect excuse. He's going to abandon NATO. So we've got to go it alone. Now Germany, of all nations, is working to rebuild a military machine. And everybody's writing about it. Everybody's talking about it. I mean, they're not sounding the alarm. But they're talking about it as if it's no big deal. Yeah, it's just normal news. It's in the news cycle. I mean, they're even being encouraged by the Jeroboam administration here. Yeah, go for it. Now, but don't build it maybe too big. For that to happen, you have to see some dramatic, significant, earth-shaking developments in Europe. And, well, that's what we've seen the last 40 years. It's a totally different landscape. And of course, all through his ministry, Mr. Armstrong was the one, back when it was the common market, he was saying, look, Europe's going to unite. First, you know, it's going to be political, then there's going to be an economic union, and then lastly, it'll be military. Well, look at where we are. He was right. He was. He was right. As soon as Mr. Armstrong died, well, the Berlin Wall came down. That was in, 1989? You saw the Soviet Union collapse. You saw the movement to unite Europe. You saw Britain leave the Union, just as Mr. Armstrong said. I just read that the other day in Mystery of the Ages. Yeah, Britain's not going to be a part of it. How did he know? How did he know that? He wrote that in 1985. He had talked back in the 1960s. That Britain would not be part of that European power, that superpower. Why? Why did he say it? Well, because Britain, they're Israelites. They're the tribe of Ephraim. And America's the tribe of Manasseh. And there are a lot of prophecies There are a lot of prophecies that tell us that that European power now forming with its beating heart in Germany, it's going to attack the United States and Britain. That's the truth. I mean, nobody's gonna go out with that message. Are you crazy? That's preposterous. I mean, and you hear it. You hear it from high-level officials. Yeah, we're selling them all kinds of military hardware and, you know, F-35s. They're not going to ever use it against us. As if this world is just full of peace and tranquility. As if peace is just breaking out all over the place. This Times of Israel. I'll get to Minnesota if I have time. I'm running out of time. Israel and Germany signed a security pact Sunday to expand cooperation on counterterrorism and cyber defense. Netanyahu's office said the declaration signed today anchors deep cooperation with Germany in the fields of cybersecurity. I mean, nothing could go wrong here. You mean there's this joint effort, this cooperative effort between Germany and Israel over cybersecurity? I mean, that gives Germany the power. It will. It'll give Germany the power to compromise Israel from the inside. We're coming into some dangerous times. Then you look at all of the turmoil right now in Iran, but you step back away from that, and yes, the mullahs have survived a lot of uprisings. But look at Iran today compared to when it looked decimated following the Iraq-Iran war in the 1980s. I mean, really, Saddam Hussein came out of that as a threat that looked much more significant, much bigger. And yet, what was God's work saying at that time in the early 1990s? We were saying, no, you're going to have to look at Iran. That's the king of the south. Now, the king of the north, that's emerging out of the heart of Europe. And the collapse of the Soviet Union is just clearing the way. We stood alone in our forecast. The king of the south, that's in Tehran. Together with all of these movements, you've got the rise of China, the reemergence of Russia, and we know that factors into the Kings of the East prophecies. Look at China over these past 40 years. And then coming back to America and Britain, I mean, look at our sickness from within. Look at what you're seeing on the streets of Minneapolis. Look at what's passing for, you know, government leadership in the state of Minnesota. It's embarrassing. And the whole world sees it. Whether it's the governor or the mayor. I mean, pretty much the Antifa mayor in Minneapolis. This is how he responded to law enforcement. Upholding the law in Minneapolis. Clip 13.
But what I can tell you for certain is that this is not sustainable. This is an impossible situation that our city is presently being put in. And at the same time, we are trying to find a way forward to keep people safe, to protect our neighbors, to maintain order. And we're in a position right now where we have residents that are asking the very limited number of police officers that we have to fight ICE agents on the street, as we have approximately 600 police officers in Minneapolis, far fewer that are able to work at any given time. And there are approximately 3,000 ICE agents in the area. 3,000. We have ICE agents throughout our city and throughout our state who, along with border control, are creating chaos.
Here's where we are. The federal law enforcement agencies, they're creating chaos because they're searching for murderers and rapists. The reality is there should be mass deportations I mean, I know President Trump is threatening to invoke the Insurrection Act. That's what this is. He's there telling the world that our law enforcement locally is going to fight ICE. We're going to resist this effort to clean up our city. How could you ever imagine something like that happening in a U.S. city 40 years ago? 40 years ago today, you know, right in the middle of 1986, January of 1986. Can you imagine someone like that? Someone like that being voted in as well. Yeah, he's going around. He's talking the Somali language and, you know, he's bosom buddies with that community. Even as they've siphoned off billions and billions of dollars from the feds. I mean, this is a kind of a sickness and disease that destroys nations. This is not a sign of health and prosperity and unity. Far from it. And so many of these people in the protest this time are women. Deranged women. Satan is preying on these wild, out-of-control emotions. Isaiah 3 says the children would rise up, or a child mentality, not childlike in the sense that Jesus said we should be humble and submissive, but a rebellious child, a child that throws temper tantrums nonstop, a child that won't stop or get out of her car if law enforcement approaches. Democratic lawmakers to file articles of impeachment against Kristi Noem. So she's out there trying to uphold the law, and Democrats in their derangement, they want to impeach her. We haven't ruled anything in, and we haven't ruled anything out, quoting one of the Dem leaders. Jesse Waters is the one that highlighted how many women are in these protests in Minneapolis. Skip ahead to, this is number 14 from the other night.
How do we fight desensitization?
I think by humanizing everybody. Every single life is valuable. I mean, I guess except for ICE's, like, kill ICE agents. But,
White women are being used as cannon fodder. That's actually an explicit strategy by the left.
This woman was part of a group of people who they train to try to be ICE interrupters. Mm-hmm. And what they try to do is observe what ICE is doing, film them, and try to use their white privilege, to be honest. They're mainly white people. Which is what we ask them to do, right?
Yeah.
Because black people, like, we can't put our bodies on the line because cops will shoot us.
The ICE Watch manifesto actually tells these Karen kamikazes this. White witnesses need to put their bodies in front of the person that's being kidnapped. So white women are shaving their heads, tracking ICE vehicles with air tags, loosening lug nuts on their tires, and ambushing them during dangerous raids. This isn't even a mostly peaceful protest. This is militant women violently sabotaging federal operations against foreign nationals.
Isn't that pleasant to see that? And you add the race to this factor as well. What was it like in 1985, 1986 with respect to race relations in America? Well, I mean, I was a kid and I wasn't perfect. I'm sure about that. But look at where we are today. And then you go back to 2009. I mean, the Dear Leader was supposed to heal all those wounds. He made it worse. Satan used him to make it worse, to create more division, strife. And then you see these women, white women, bleeding heart liberals, out there to try to disrupt. They're being asked now to confront ICE aggressively. This is not going to end well. Carry on with the next one from that same segment, clip 15.
I have this spirit in me that's like, well, I'm just going to go up and punch an ICE agent right in the mouth and I will go to jail. I might die. I will go to jail and I will not be as helpful to the cause as I could be. talking to my phone and showing up to my job. And that kills me. I want to be doing more. I definitely don't want to assault an ICE officer. I'm just saying that's the vibe that I have.
Are these ladies looking for a new type of exercise? Psychiatrists are telling Primetime that these women have deep-rooted anger issues, and immigration agents are just an excuse for a punching bag.
You know, one thing that hating men has trained me for is literally trained me for chasing ICE cars off of my street, five of them right now, following down the neighborhood, honking, blowing whistles, telling them to off. All that rage that I have felt towards men is coming out.
These are deranged women, obviously. But, you know, it also says something about our society and the lack of real men. You know, where are the men? Where are the leaders? Whether in the home or in society. And then when you see them, so many of them are like Governor Walz or Mayor Fry. What is wrong with us? Well, God prophesied of this kind of division. Angry women, angry minorities, waving Mexican flags, screaming at Trump and his wife, cursing, and profanity. Don't get us started on that one. What, again, just going back 40 years. I mean, I was only a teenager, so I can't say I know all the history perfectly, and I'm certainly not suggesting that it was a world without trouble at that time. But it was a simpler, more straightforward time. It was a time before smartphones. It was a time before social media. It was before the internet. It was before, you know, hundreds and hundreds of TV stations. It was before Netflix. And now you look at all of these, these prophetic developments, whether in Europe, in Iran, in Russia, in China. And then the sickness, the race relations deteriorating. Satan's got his fingerprints on all of it. Just skip ahead to that last one from the Jesse Waters. This is number 17, I think.
Why are women on the front lines?
Well, you know, Jesse, I think it's this mental illness, whatever this particular version of. Mental illness is going to be studied for centuries. I really believe that. It seems to impact affluent women, white liberal leftist women, women in general, and it will be studied. And I have a message for them. They are not freedom fighters. They are not the French resistance. They are marks of the communist front groups that are enacting a mass collective psychosis on them. And they are being used, as you said, as cannon fodder. And these communist front groups can't believe their luck that these women are dumb enough to be doing this and putting their lives on the line. And it's sad because who are they protecting, Jesse? They're protecting child rapists, sodomists. They're protecting actual murderers. They're protecting drug traffickers and human traffickers. So if they want their communities to be safe, they would be smart to get out of the way, teach their children how to respect law authority, law enforcement, like I was taught, like you were taught, and just let the ICE and federal law enforcement do their jobs.
Yeah, I remember Charlie used to talk to some of these women. Remember, he used to sit down calmly, listen, ask questions, and they would still, I mean, remember how they used to shake and scream and they couldn't control themselves?
Their chins would quiver.
Right. I mean, that's yes. The kind of person you're dealing with.
This Time Magazine piece, Riot Women, a revelatory TV series from the feminist-minded Happy Valley and Gentleman Jack, whatever these shows are. The creator, Sally Wainwright, comes to the U.S. via BritBox, created in Britain, and then imported to the U.S. And it's the new thing. I mean, this is big. Casts an empathetic eye on these rarely acknowledged struggles, loneliness, invisibility, menopause, and the stigma that surrounds it. Caretaking fatigue, just tired of taking care of the kids. Tired of, you know, being a homemaker. Oh, no. Can't do that. Take to the streets. Get angry. Get in the face of ICE officials. hate men. This, and then this kind of entertainment, if you can call it that, of course, it gets rave reviews. Oh, it's cutting edge. Yeah. Oh, it's brilliant. It's so well written. The New York Post. OnlyFans stars moan about a proposed 50% Florida sin tax. Top OnlyFans stars, that's pornography. They're producing, you can just produce pornography. Talk about what's different from 40 years ago. How about the porn industry? Now anybody can produce porn in your own house and make money from it. And here's a case where the producers of that filth, they're upset because they're getting taxed. There was one woman in here, I think she's made like $90 million over the last couple, 3 years. $90 million! I mean, she's making more than sports stars. Hollywood actors. It's insane. I mean, the appetite that Americans have for this content. What does it say about us? This is a different world than it was 40 years ago. It says here, I don't want them to be selling their body. This is, I think, quoting one of the legislators who's trying to put this 50% tax on them. He says, I don't want them to be selling their bodies to sick men online. And I don't want young, impressionable men who are straight from Christ to be told and drawn into lust and to have their entire brain rewired. Well, good for him. There's a little bit of leadership and boldness and courage. But just coming back to that final point that he makes, I mean, our brains have been rewired these past 40 years. Oh, yes. And you can dig up the receipts to see, I mean, with this kind of a TV program, Riot Women, you think that would be broadcast on one of the big three networks in 1985? Yeah, we've got a new show about riot women. They're angry. They're unhappy. They want to destroy. They hate men. And we're probably going to win some awards. My father writes in this booklet, Overcoming Satan. He says, Satan is to blame above all. He's the father of lies and deceit. He never comes with warlike rhetoric. It's always with words of love and peace. But believe me, he comes with a war-making spirit, that's for sure. And you see it everywhere. And then he, like so many do, they just take a nice-sounding label and stamp it on, and then everything's better, I guess. Then there's peace. Or if there's a little bit of division, it's healthy. It's healthy. I mean, you've got to speak out. You've got to speak your mind. You've got to resist. That's what we're supposed to do in America. Fight. Protest. Take action. Did we have this kind of communist infiltration in 1985? I mean, surely it was creeping in through the university and other institutions. But look at where we are today. I mean, Tim Walz, he was nearly the vice president of the United States. I mean, the other thing that montage shows you is just how close America was to total destruction. That's what Satan wants. And God didn't let it happen, as we've said so many times on this show. God saw the bitter affliction. And he saved America by the hand of Jeroboam. God did it. But are we repenting now that so much of this sickness and the filth is being exposed? No, instead we're debating whether or not men can be in women's sports. That made it all the way up to the Supreme Court. Can you believe this? And there's actually, who knows how many, I would assume it's going to be upheld, you know, what President Trump has put in place or decreed. But there's undoubtedly going to be three or four justices that are going to survey the evidence and say, you know what, I think if he considers himself to be a woman, well, I think that he should be able to compete against women. That's at the Supreme Court of the United States of America. In verse 26 of Daniel 8, my father says, Daniel writes, and the vision of the evening and the morning, which was told, is true. Well, he's taking you through some verses in Daniel 8, and again, exposing the devil and his involvement. It says God gets very specific with this prophecy. It's carefully planned to the very day. What a loving God we have, my father says. If God did so much to help Daniel fight against Satan while this was being revealed, what kind of battle do you think we will face as God opens our minds to actually understand and proclaim this message? This is an Overcoming Satan, our little booklet. Everything we offer on this show is offered without cost or obligation. Just call the operators at the 800 number on your screen. My father says, Satan is raging mad right now. He's been cast down to this earth, and his sight is fixed on you, your faith. How will you respond to his attack? Will you be like so many Laodiceans who have caved in to the pressure? Or will you respond as Daniel did, the prophet Daniel? I mean, we've got to look at these towering examples of faith in Scripture. Paul referenced a couple dozen of them in Hebrews 11 in one chapter. And he tells you what these heroic figures did in order to hold on to the truth. Paul talks about what kept them motivated, what kept them full of zeal, what gave them that fighting spirit. I guess we can read a few verses over there. Seems like it would be a fitting way to conclude today's show. I have so much more news that we didn't even have time to get to. Tomorrow, by the way, I think we're going to play the special World Tomorrow presentation following Mr. Armstrong's death. It aired, I think, toward the end of January in 1986. And, you know, even that television program, you know, it'll show you just how very different things are today, 40 years on. We're living in a different world. That was a pivotal moment when Mr. Armstrong died, in more ways than one. Hebrews 11, verse 1 says, now faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. Your faith is your evidence. Faith is your anchor, your belief, your trust in the Word of God. In that sermon Mr. Dukach Sr. gave back in 1994, he basically said, you know, the law is out the window. You decide. That's why there's so much faithlessness in the world today. There is such a thing, by the way, as dead faith. Read about it in James 2. I mean, in this chapter, Paul's talking about living faith. The faith of Christ. Christ in you. Galatians 2:20. Crucified with Christ. Yet I live. But it's not me that's living. It's Christ in me. I belong to Christ. I am his instrument. I have counted the cost. I told God I'm going to be faithful even in the littlest of things. It says here, verse 6, but without faith it's impossible to please him. For he that comes to God must believe that he is, and that he's a rewarder of them that diligently seek him. By faith, Noah, being warned of God of things not seen as yet, moved with fear. God warned Noah. God said there's a flood coming. Flood didn't come for 100 years. And yet Noah moved with fear. If God says it, I've got to do it. He didn't stop and question it. He didn't submit it to a committee of some kind and say, hey, you know, which side should I come on with this? He responded to God. He did God's work. He did God's will. I mean, what Noah did, there's a lot of parallels with what we're facing today. I mean, Jesus himself said, as in the days of Noah. Read Luke 17 sometime. So here's a case where the world that then was, that's the way the Bible calls it or defines it, the antediluvian world, the world before the flood, I mean, that world came crashing to an end. Read Genesis 6, where it just talks about violence all over the place. It's everywhere. The end of all flesh is at hand. That's what God said to Noah, and Noah believed him. And so Noah went to work constructing this ark. And everyone on earth died in the flood, all of them. The end of all flesh. By faith, Abraham, when he was called to go out into a place which he should after receive for an inheritance, obeyed. And he went out not knowing where he went. He went to a strange land. He left his family. He left his friends. He left his hometown. Why? Because God said to. Notice a common thread in all these examples. Abraham obeyed. He had the faith to obey God. By faith, it says, he sojourned in the land of promise, as in a strange country, dwelling in tabernacles with Isaac, Jacob. For he looked for a city which has foundations, whose builder and maker is God. He had vision. He had his sights set on New Jerusalem. I mean, that's projecting far ahead. That's faith. That's living faith. Through faith also, Sarah herself received strength to conceive seed and was delivered of child when she was past age, because she judged him faithful who had promised. I mean, she was not only past age, but they had to wait, what was it, 25 years before Isaac came along? I mean, that was a long trial. God said, you're going to have a child. They thought, well, we're too old for that. They had a child 25 years later. It's so easy, if it goes on 25 years, to doubt, to question, to stagger, spiritually speaking. That's what the Laodiceans have done. Didn't happen as fast as they were hoping. So Mr. Armstrong dies. Their lack of faith is exposed. And they sit down and listen to a sermon that says, yeah, everything we used to believe and teach, it's out the window. We've changed it all. We renounce our entire belief system. And how condemning when you look not just at Mr. DeKotch when he was giving that sermon, but then there were some shots of the crowd as well. And they're all just, you know, I guess, nodding along. How could you do that? What does it say about the lack of faith, the lack of substance? These individuals in Hebrews 11, we don't have time to go through all of them, but I mean, they had some substance to their religion. They believed. They had vision. They moved with fear. That's all we have time for on today's show, the fastest moving hour in broadcasting. You are listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Thanks for joining us on today's show, and we'll see you tomorrow.